Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. On this show, I interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are shaping and many times changing the overall sports industry. And today, I'm really excited. We have a special guest. It's Matt Foss. Matt is a strategic partner of ours at 76 Capital. We're going to get into that and some of the ways that we've met each other. He's a former Division I football player and captain when he was at Indiana University, and is now a, by the way, before I even get into what he's now doing, he also created, founded two other companies. We'll talk about that. And Matt is a certified EOS implementer, coach, and facilitator. So, Matt, welcome to our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Wayne, it's a pleasure, man. I look forward to this. It's going to be a fun half hour, 45 minutes together.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we love having guests like you on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. I mean, you're somebody who, you are a coach. You are a leader. And, you know, I think it would be great for you to share with our audience a little bit of what do you do on a day-to-day basis? And what does that really mean to be a coach and facilitator?
Yeah, in a business, it's lonely at the top a lot. You know it from running your firm. And I think every CEO and owner and entrepreneur out there would admit it's lonely at the top. And the real thing that I do, and I work with business owners and the leadership teams to really help coach them and guide them, not on these they're just basic tools that we all know. You know, when you run a business, you have to be able to have the right people in the right seats. You have to have a clear vision of where you're going. You got to be able to track those people, and then you got to be able to execute. And what happens is, for me, I'm a coach that I always say I'm the 12th man on the team. I always use football references with all my clients, and sometimes they get sick of it. But like, I'm the 12th man on the team that's guiding, supporting, rah-rah, and then kick them in the ass at the same time. And ultimately, that business owner, I have a relationship with them and their team to hold them accountable and to be that person when I say facilitate. When they have an issue, it's not that I come out like a consultant and tell them what they should do. Like, there is no way, Wayne, that I could come into your business and tell you the right thing to do. You've been doing it for multiple years. I'm just going to ask a lot of questions. And then the really smart people in the room all of a sudden realize, oh, that's a great question. And it attunely, they come up with the answer themselves and they commit to it. So that's really the coaching and facilitating that I do with my clients.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's been really interesting to, you know, get to know you, your background, and, you know, maybe if you could share a little bit of your background. I mean, you, as I mentioned in the introduction, I mean, you were a Division I football player at Indiana University. You were the captain of the team. You know, how did you, you know, end up, you know, going from, you know, a football player in college to going into the business world and being able to, you know, work with such top CEOs these days?
Yeah, I think we all go in journeys, and that, you know, I think when you tell your story, it seems like it was like, all these things lined up and success happened, where there was so many failures. Right. And I think I was just having a meeting, and like, the failures we learn the most from. But you know, my story, and I'll kind of add this on that I've never done before, but so I'm at IU, I'm playing football, and I was the only guy that was in a fraternity. So at this point, like, there's not a lot of time for me to work and make money. And my parents supported me 100%, but ultimately, like, I just didn't have that beer money, or, you know, I just didn't have extra money. And my girlfriend at the time was in a sorority, and I'm an entrepreneur. Like, I'll find a way. And what I found was these girls at Indiana loved high-end purses, but a lot of them couldn't afford it. So what did I do? I flew to New York, went to Chinatown, and bought $10,000 worth of, you know, Louis Vuitton and got, you know, Chanel and all these different purses. I had no clue what they were. and then went back and sold them and had like this business for 2 years where I was hustling fake purses in college. And so, you know, I like, it's just that entrepreneurial spirit of like, I didn't know it at the time. It's just to make money was kind of like the gauge, but it was the fun of solving the problem and doing something a little different. And from there, graduated.
But wait, before we leave that, I mean, that is such a great story. I mean, going out and selling purses. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the founder of Under Armour, Kevin Plank, when he was at the University of Maryland, he before he created that shirt that could whisk, you know, your perspiration from it, because he didn't like playing football. You know, he was also a safety like you, right? He didn't like, you know, playing football with a heavy, wet, you know, T-shirt. He actually sold roses at the University of Maryland. So he was out there hustling, being an entrepreneur, just like you.
Yep. And I think you just, everybody's done it. If you look back on your past, and it's not just starting a business, being in a bit, like you have this hustle inside of you that you just can't sit still and you just figure out a way to make things happen. And sometimes you lose money. Sometimes you gain a little bit of money, but, that was fun. It was definitely an interesting time. So after school, I started a commercial development company. So it was like buying land and developing it. I had somewhat of an idea of what I was doing. I had some support from my dad. And then through that, a lot of the costs that came from commercial development is like the site work, the water, the sewer, the streets. So started a construction company. Ultimately, like crazy entrepreneurs do, like if it's expensive, why can't we do it in-house? And kind of did that. And had these businesses that, you know, I went to business school, but ultimately you don't realize the people side and the stresses and that the amount of pressure that's on the owners to make, you know, some decisions. And it was a lot. It was a lot for me at a young age. And I just realized I'm a great operator. I just don't like the stresses of being the guy that has 70 plus people and, you know, their families and their mortgage payments and, you know, their kids. And I just said, I'm going to step away. And it was timely because it was 2008. The market was way down. So sold the businesses and then went in, worked for a company and kind of brought full circle that I had this construction background and then I had the sports background and I worked for this company called HydroWorks Therapy Pools. And HydroWorks is the highest end underwater treadmill in the world. They were the first one to come up with it. And all of the major sports teams, professional, collegiate sports, worldwide were using this. And when I say worldwide, I mean every single football and soccer club, you know, rugby club. And then you'd have high-end net worth people that would use these. And it was basically a pool that had a treadmill in it. So when you're exercising, you know, you get the hydrostatic pressure. And if you think about it, the big linemen or, you know, the Larry Birds of the world really use this because their body just couldn't take the working out on land because they were just so big and they were beating up their body. Being in the water helped tremendously. I worked for them in sales. The head of sales, and then I became the COO and then became the CEO and sold to private equity. And then after we sold the private equity, I was on board with them for about a year and a half. And then it was time. Yeah. I don't think that was the right seat for me anymore. And I kind of went off and did what I'm doing now, working with business owners, you know, business strategy and having a whole hell of a lot of fun every day.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, so you're what's a normal day, you know, in the world of Matt Foss? I mean, when you're working with these major CEOs, like they're so busy, how do you know, get their attention and time to be able to sit down and or have a conversation with them and talk through, you know, a lot of the things that you can do to help them be successful?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I would have answered this question a whole hell of a lot different 3 years ago than I would today. What does a day look like? Like for me, I have put my family first and I still don't do it great, right? But I think it's intentional. Like I love taking my kids to school and that's really important. Like I have a 13-year-old daughter and twins that are seven, Millie and Maddox, and then my wife, Janelle. But taking them to school, like those, just those conversations and that the impact that's going to have. So that's how I start. I try to start my day off with, you know, is family first. But when I'm with a client, they also know that that's really important for me. So I don't start super early, 7 o'clock in the morning, because I want to be able to take my kids to school at 7:30 and start at 8:30 with a client. So these super high motor CEOs, their problem is they don't take a breath to step back and work on top of the business at a 30 to 50,000 foot view. They're always in it so deep. And when they're with me, what I do is we meet remotely. We meet at my office, and they come in and they have this ability from 8 o'clock till 5 o'clock. We're talking about the business, not in the business, where they are every single day. And that helps them, one, to evaluate their team, and their team's kind of coming up with this strategic, and it's not what's the fire today, and really solving issues and being honest and vulnerable and very direct. And then outside of just these sessions that I do in it, you know, with them all day, like I'll have phone conversations and I'll get calls from them when something really bad happens and they just need somebody to talk to about it. You know, hey, this is going on with an executive or something in the business. I just need somebody to talk to about it. And it's just you listening to them, right? And then asking a couple of questions and getting them, you know, to kind of go, okay, either this isn't that bad, or hey, this is the action steps I'm going to take. And then I get the calls that, hey, something great happened, you know, and I get to be that 12th man cheering for them and go, and hey, congratulations. Because as you know, like highly driven people don't take, you know, the wins as deeply as they should. They kind of like, oh, we were supposed to get there, let's move on to the next. I really try to get them in the moment to appreciate, you know, what they did, how you got there. You know, and the path is more important than the outcome sometimes.
It's amazing. It's amazing you get the opportunity to really see sort of the inside of some of these really large companies and some of these really big CEOs. I mean, when you get to spend this amount of time with them, I mean, have there been certain traits or there's certain things that you find that, you know, really successful people and successful CEOs have?
I think CEOs and are kind of like your partner, and they are very much the same way I am. You know, so the successful relationships I have, like usually that person on the other end is similar to me in some way. And I don't think it means that CEO is more successful than another. But what I find that the CEOs that can be candid and vulnerable at the same time have a superpower that most don't. Because if they feel like they got to tell, do, I know, you do, like instead of asking a question and bringing up, you know, sensitive emotional things in a direct way, but then being very vulnerable in the case of listening, the team just gels and people are attracted to those type of people. And then I think the unwavering CEOs and entrepreneurs out there to never give up. And it's not about success. It's just never give up. And they have this, like, it almost feels like a protective coat around themselves that they're going to make a decision. They're going to go at it. And if it fails, they learn something. If it didn't, like, it was supposed to happen, because we are not going to give up until we get to where we want to be. So I think those two things, being, you know, healthy in the conversations and just being unbelievably relentless on not giving up.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to hear that. I mean, it's one of the things that we've discussed, Matt. I mean, we talk about the types of entrepreneurs at 76 Capital that we like to invest in that have that incredible passion, desire, drive. And then that last piece you just talked about, persistence, right? Yeah. Being able to constantly get back up after getting knocked down. And one of the things that I'd love to hear your view on this is, you know, being a former athlete, you know, a D1 athlete, captain of the football team at Indiana, right? I mean, I'm sure there were times that you, during your career or when you were walking on to come onto the team, right? I mean, like that you were knocked down and you're like, man, I don't know if I can get back up. This is a really tough time. And I don't know, man, I think I'm just going to throw in the towel, but then you didn't, right? And talk about that persistence type mentality.
Yeah. So in my sports career, in high school, I wrestled, I played baseball and played football. Love football. I was a better baseball player than anything. I was fast, you know? And I actually went to school down in Florida, Daytona Beach Community College, to play baseball. And I thought I'd get drafted. I had all these hopes and wishes. And then all of a sudden I played 80 games in a season. I'm like, this isn't for me. Like I like baseball, but like, this is, you know, the 30, 40 game season was fun. The 80, not so much. And riding on a bus and like, it was a full commitment. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to leave Florida and go back to IU and I'll walk on the baseball team and I'll play, you know, 'cause I still wanted to be an athlete. And I walked on the baseball team and it just wasn't fun. And I thought, I'll walk on the football team too. Why not? Right. And at the time, Cam Cameron was our head coach. Antoine Randall Ellis, I live in Pennsylvania, so obviously everybody, a lot of Steelers fans that know Antoine, was our quarterback. And he was explosive and he was a great leader. And ultimately, they just needed guys to be on the practice squad. Well, I came from a high school where I was the stud. You know, I started my sophomore year and all of a sudden I'm at IU and the funny story, like I come in and I don't even have my own number. They give me a number that another guy already has. So it's like, I'm never getting in the game and I'm number 15 and I'm a receiver on the scout team and I get my ass kicked every day and they didn't care. Right. They literally didn't care.
You were the number 215 and they really didn't care.
I was the number 215. And I think they did that because who knows? It didn't matter. I was irrelevant. Like when we'd watch video, I'd watch video of Michigan's offensive plays to run those rather than you're right. So I'm on the opposite side. And like it was fun to be out there, but you just never felt like you were part of the team. You know, the scholarship, there's a big difference between a scholarship guy and a walk-on. And especially at the beginning where you really have to prove yourself. And you never travel. And then you stand on the sidelines for the home games because you want to look like the team's, 100 people, right? To stand on the sideline for an entire game, the first game I did it with all that pads and all the helmet, like I was in the best shape of my life. Like my back hurt after it because I literally stood on the sideline, right? So that was very humbling for me. And like, there were times did I want to give up on it? No, I really love being a part of the team, but I just didn't know where it was going to lead. And a really funny story is I played flag football for my fraternity and we went to the championship game and this is back in the days where like you get the gloves and everything and you weren't allowed to give them away, right? Like you couldn't give them away to anybody. My whole team had cleats and gloves and all this awesome stuff. And we go to the championship game. Well, it's on a Sunday and I was late showing up Sunday for film, like by a half hour. The game went long and I show up and the coach was literally like, pack your stuff and go. You got out. And I was a half hour late, which is not an excuse. It was just like gone. Like I was indispensable. And I remember I went to Cam Cameron and I said, hey man, I really screwed up here. My priorities on this, I want to be on this team. I'm fully committed. And he goes, hey, I believe in you. You can be back on the team. And that was kind of like my, all right, this isn't just playing around. Like let's really commit to this. And 2 years with Cam Cameron and then he got fired. Antoine went to the pros and then we brought on Jerry DiNardo, which Jerry's on Big Ten Network now. And Jerry was a guy played at Notre Dame before he played, with us. He was at LSU, had some big time football. And he came in with this mentality of the best players are going to play if they fit our culture and they they actually do what they say they're going to do, not just because they're the best players. And IU, sorry, I'm talking a lot. I don't get to talk about this much. IU was this conglomerate of good athletes. And then I would say like third tier athletes from the South. Florida State, you know, the big schools down there didn't pick them up. So then IU got them. So they were great athletes, but they just didn't have that. They were very individualistic. And there was a lot of fighting. You know, we didn't play as a team. And Jerry really, you know, can and said even some of the starters, like, kicked them off the team and just tried to reboot the whole thing. And he was a player's coach. Like, if you were willing to put in the work, like, he was going to get you to play. And he gave me my opportunity to play on special teams. And just kind of, you know, did that, you know, kickoff return, punt return, then got to be on the defense and just kind of earn that right to be on the field. And it was a struggle. It kind of go back to it was a struggle because we lost so much. We never, in my 4 years, we never won more than 5 games. So never went to a bowl game. And it's this mentality, Wayne, of, You can kick me down, but I'm going to get back up. Like, we play Michigan State and get beat by 2 points. Next week we're playing Michigan and they're top 5 in the country. Like, we thought we were going to win. And we went into the video as if we were going to win. We went in Sunday all the way to Friday, getting off the plane like we were going to win. And I think that ability to compartmentalize and refocus and have the confidence is amazing. And in a team like Alabama, that the pressure or you know, all these big time teams is, if you lose, is the pressure, right? And then they go into the pros and they start losing and they're just not comfortable with that. I think the losing part, or, you know, for me in college, taught me a ton in business that, like, you can keep working and you're going to win. It's all about the process, not the outcome always.
You know, those are incredible stories and great pieces of advice. I mean, and I just have to go a little deeper. I mean, what was it like going into these unbelievably, you know, historic stadiums across the Big Ten? Was there one place that was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to come out here and I'm not just watching the game and sitting here. I'm out here. I'm going to play and I'm going to try to knock some guy down. I mean, like, what was your most favorite place to play?
The one I enjoyed the most was, as I was a huge Wolverines fan, Michigan fan growing up, and being the captain, coin toss, my family being there was like amazing. But I think you ask any athlete, the stadiums, you don't really get the feel when you're on the field because you're so focused. Right? Like the vastness of it. But the only stadium that there was actually two, Penn State, we played in a whiteout like that. Like, people think the whiteout looks cool. It's unbelievably distracting on the field, unbelievably distracting. So that was pretty incredible being on the field and you'd look at that. And then the other, we played at Washington and it was so incredibly loud. Like, it was so loud and it just didn't make sense, you know, the way the stadium was built, but it, you know, they know how to make loud stadiums in Seattle.
Amazing. No, that's amazing. Yeah. So, you know, was there a specific person that you, over your career, that you've looked up to, what was a mentor, was it a coach, or was it a family member that really helped shape who you are today?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, my parents for sure. You know, my dad was hard driving, high expectation, not a lot of pats on the back, you know, so it kind of got me a little rough around the edges and gritty. My mom was really, you know, empathetic, which I don't have a lot of empathy, but like I have a good balance of that. And I had some great coaches. And I say this is me now being a coach, those great coaches were, they're the ones that told me what I needed to hear, not what I wanted to hear. Right. And I think it's the biggest thing for me in the sports world that converted over to the business world is, you know, if somebody's running a $1 million company or a $1 billion company, if they're willing to have somebody tell them something, kind of a blind spot of what they need to work on, or maybe the way they talk to people, maybe the way they conduct themselves, and they're willing to take that and they take it as love. Hey, Wayne, I need to tell you something. This isn't going to be easy for me to say this, and it's for your benefit. And they take that and they change, or they at least evaluate it. That's what the great coaches and mentors always did for me, was they kind of gave you that punch in the face of reality. But those are the things that you need to hear. And it really shaped and kind of had the trajectory of who I became because of some of those conversations.
You know, one of the big things you certainly know here at 76 Capital, we're all about how sports is changing because of this amazing new, you know, technology, new innovations, all these new things that are changing. Laws are changing. Sports betting's now legal. You know, the fact that you've got, you know, the Apples and Googles and Amazons are now becoming sports media companies and broadcasters and streaming companies. And, you know, everything's kind of in a flux. There's salary caps of, you know, forget salary caps. Salaries are blown past any sort of cap these days. With the amount of money players are making and coaches and owners are paying for teams. What are some of the things that you see that you have to discuss and talk about with a number of the CEOs that you work with, and how do they deal with all the change that's going on within their world?
Sports is interesting because everybody has a passion for somebody to win and they want to get the best players. And, you know, it's kind of like interviewing for, you know, a job. You interview them and you're going to get the best in that first interview, right? They're going to answer the questions. They're going to dress right. They're going to be respectful. What's changed in sports, and I think in our world, is the analytics side of things. Like, now guys are getting drafted, not based on the numbers that they produce, but they're being based on the little chip that's in their pads or in their sneakers or shorts of how fast, where they cut. And we're talking milliseconds that they're looking at athletes. Like, this person is an athlete. We can teach them the game, compared to before, where it was kind of like, ooh, they run a, you know, they did a good bench press. They did a good, you know, 40-yard dash. They've got the skills, and hey, they had the numbers too. And it's amazing what analytics in sports, it doesn't matter if it's betting, it doesn't matter if it's how you draft, it doesn't matter if it's moving one guy from one position to another. The same thing happens in business is when you have these analytics, you know, I call them scorecard or measurables that you're looking at, that shows the health of your company. And in athletes, it shows the true, like, statistics of what the capabilities of this person is and where they could actually go with, you know, a fine-tuned training or, you know, whatever it might be. So I think the analytics and the numbers and the things that we're tracking today is out of this world. And I love it because it's making the game a science and taking some of the guessing out. But I think it just elevates that ability of on the field and, you know, in the business place, you know, outcomes, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really amazing to see how data analytics, technology is really, has really changed the game over the last couple decades in the world of business. But now seeing it really come to the world of sports, and there's this big, you know, spotlight on it. People are really getting to see what's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I think the love of sport, it is the ultimate business, right? Like, if you're money, you know, I'm a Colts fan, right? And ultimately, if the quarterback isn't playing well on Monday, we're, you know, armchair quarterback and go, oh, they should have done this, you should have done that. Well, ultimately, if he's not performing, he's going to get the bench. And I think we all appreciate and want that, but we don't do it in business. Right? We don't put some of those people on the bench, or we don't pull some of those people off the bench to give them a chance. And, like, sport has become that, like, and always has been that thoroughfare of greatness. Like, you have to perform, and the behind the scenes, what these people are doing to be able to get to that level is incredible. And I think that's where everybody appreciates sports so much, is because the dedication behind the scenes that these people are putting in to be able to perform when we see them on TV.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, this has been an amazing conversation. It's been really appreciate you joining us on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. And as we wrap up here, well, first of all, you know, I think we have to give a big thank you to John Williams and the team at Summit Trail Advisors for originally connecting us. I'm really happy that we've had this, you know, be able to now have this relationship. Yep. And certainly be able to find more and more ways for us to help each other and work together. Certainly thrilled about that. One of the things I obviously want to make sure that everyone who's watching or listening to this show, how can they get in touch with Matt Foss?
Yeah, I think the easiest way, my website is www.eosworldwide/Matt-Foss. And it has all my contact information on it. Or, you know, you can somehow, some way look me up on LinkedIn, Matt Foss 37, which is my college number, and connect with me. And if I can be of any help in any way, I'd love to be able to do that. That's why I do this, is to be able to help first. And then after that, there's so much that comes from just trying to help somebody.
So as we wrap up here, you started by saying when you joined the Indiana football team, you were number 15, the second number 15. And now you just mentioned your number was 37. Talk about what that was like going from the second 15 to being that number 37.
Oh, man, it was a reward, right? Like, it was real. It was I will forever have a thumbprint in Indiana in that number, right? And I think it's all athletes should look at it and be proud, one, for the hard work and that number that they're forever that's gonna be their number. And there'll be another 100 people that have that number, but it's the thing that kind of means the most. And I literally have to have it right there, right? You Love know, it. And
You gotta, if you're watching, go on YouTube and watch this, because you got to see his jerseys up there. I love it. Both the red and the white. I love it.
Yep. Got them both. And, you know, it's just that it's a pride thing. Regardless, we only won 5 games a year. You know, I was number 37, and it feels really good.
Well, Matt, this has been awesome. Loved hearing all of the things that, you know, all the amazing stories you shared, the great advice on what it means to really be a leader, what it takes, the different traits that you need to have to be a successful leader. And, you know, the great thing is that if, you know, there are CEOs out there, there are people that really want to learn about being the best and wanting to be that great CEO, all they got to do is just look up Matt Foss on the internet and come see him or reach out to me. I'll get you in touch with Matt. Really simple. No problem. But again, Matt, this has been awesome having you on our 76 Capital Leadership Show. Thank you so much and have a great day.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Wayne.